Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray, and for tonight, if tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry. Something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And for tonight's show, we actually have a few carryovers, and then we will go into our main topic, which is poetry inspired by the art of Carol Nelson. And if you don't know her artwork, I highly recommend checking it out. And then we will, if there's time, do a third contest, which is Rights Inspired by the poem The Raspberry Room, which is a poem by Karen Gottschall. And joining me, I have Fill My Eyes. And hello, Jean. How's it going?
Hey, Pam. It's going well. How are you tonight?
Well,
go ahead,
you know. all in all, pretty good, you know. So got a great lineup of poetry.
Awesome.
Good to have you here. And, you know, maybe we'll get somebody else to call in. You know, like, yeah, Jeremy or somebody could call in to keep me company. That sure would be nice.
Yeah, I think Jeremy's calling so I can heckle him a little bit. What do you think?
There
nice.
You go.
Yeah,
there,
chicken.
Yeah.
He's a chicken. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you see post earlier today in LNP about skylight at the Walmart last night?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Oh, my goodness. Crazy. Hail in July. But where else in Wisconsin would you get hail in July that would slam, right?
Oh, yep, I hear you. Wisconsin, you guys are novel up there, I'm telling you. I guess summer's over. Yeah, I guess summer's over. You only get a couple of days, I hear. So,
that's right.
That's
2 days, and that's it. But, yeah,
okay,
it was crazy. I saw videos of it. It broke the skylight, and you could just see on the videos, like, this rain and hail just right
crazy.
Down. Yeah, right inside the Walmart. Crazy stuff.
Mother Nature is a simple old broad, ain't she? She really is. It's like, okay, well,
yeah.
You know, winter weather in the summertime and summer weather in, like, the end of the winter time. And, yeah, the hell is spring. We're going to skip that this year. Maybe we'll skip autumn, too. You never know. It's all
right?
About what
oh, God, we hope not.
Yeah, well, you know.
I need autumn to help me prepare for winter. If I had to go straight from, like, spring or summer to winter, I think I would have an emotional breakdown.
Well, I have those anyway, so it doesn't really matter, you know. Yeah.
Oh, good point.
They just happen. But yes.
Yep.
So, you look like maybe you could use a hand tonight, so I figured I would pop on and we'll figure it out.
I do, yes. You know.
Before. But we'll see.
Yep, you know, but sometimes people just don't feel well, and sometimes people are getting some much-needed rest, and it happens to the best of us.
Yep, for sure. For sure. Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Hey, Pam, well, anywhere you want to go,
yeah.
I'm here for the ride.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, buckle up.
All right, so
up first. Oh, what was that?
My seatbelt is engaged.
Awesome. Good thinking. All right, so up next we're going to do carryovers first. And the first right we have up is Walked Out Your Door, Leaving My Excuses by Jenny the Deep. And, Phil, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure thing. Walked Out Your Door, Leaving My Excuses by Jenny the Deep. I know I promised never to desert you, but the spirit within me is hurting. No excuses, I vowed to always stay. So why am I seeking the coward's way out? Feeling as if I'm good for nothing, make me torn in what to choose. Easier said than done to endure this pain, when malignant misery mocks me. Heavy chest crushing my heart, lost in the dark, I'm afraid to go in. Must persist to preserve my family, out of the maze of madness I crawl. Keeping my vow to all I remain, ignorance is not bliss. Behind closed doors. Decent on the outside, crumbling on the inside. No more cowering or excuses. Tonight I leave your dark, cold cellar, never to look back. I will survive. End poem.
Great read there, Jean, and a wonderful write by Jenny. I have to say, speaking of your name, you know, it seems like no matter how many years we do shows together, I cannot stop myself from automatically going back and forth between Jean and Phil. And I'm pretty sure after all these years, people are wondering if I even know who I'm talking to.
Well, I don't know what it is. I always find it funny because you go between Phil and Jean all the time, and I laugh. But, you know, I don't even really pay a lot of attention to it. It's like, I know she's talking to me, so, just answer.
Right, exactly.
If I would turn my head. Uh-huh. You know, I'm so used to that.
Yep.
You know, And Gene Romney's are the only three floating around, so it's, that's usually me, too. But, yeah. I get it, though. But, yeah.
Yep, exactly.
My new personality.
Funny. But, yeah, definitely a great write by Jenny. As always, she does really well with the emotional darkness. I like how this speaks on the idea that you eventually have to realize when it's time to walk away and acknowledge the strength within yourself. I especially saw that message in Keeping My Vow to All I Remain, Ignorance is Not Bliss Behind Closed Doors. Decent on the outside, crumbling on the inside. No more cowering or excuses. You know, just wonderful lines and very well done. And your thoughts?
You know, I said this was a great write. I don't know what the prompts were, so I'm not going to pretend like I do. But I think the write was very good. And, you know, I liked how it progressed. And I did like the last stanza and the couplet at the end. I think that really... was the heart of the piece, you know. Keeping my vow to all I remain. Ignorance is not bliss behind closed doors. Decent on the outside, crumbling on the inside. No more cowering or excuses. Tonight I leave your dark, cold cellar, never to look back. Who will survive? And, you know, I don't know what the prompt is, but that dark, cold cellar doesn't strike me as an actual place. It's definitely just, I shouldn't say not a place. It's not a room at the foot of the steps. It's more like a prison of sorts, you know, a mental and kind of thing is what I have in my head on that. Whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know, but that's my guess. And I think that was really well done, Jenny. Nicely put. And well written.
Oh, I have to agree. Yeah, and I like the observation there on the whole idea of the cellar not being actually a physical one, but a metaphorical one. And
right.
Jenny wrote three different quotes by Samuel Foote. He who is good at excuses is generally good for nothing else. Born in a cellar and living in a garret, and one who preserves all the exterior decencies of ignorance. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
You can definitely see the inspiration for all of them.
Right. Yeah, because she, I think she hit on all three of those nicely. So, excuse me, well done, Jenny, all the way around. Absolutely. I had to touch a Richard show in here when I read the third stanza. Because it was to preserve my family out of the maze of madness I crawl on. I went, oh, my God, wait, I just heard all this, didn't I? I laughed. It's that maze of madness.
Oh, that's funny. Right?
So, yeah, that was a good write. I liked it.
It was, for sure. And, I have to be thankful that because earlier, the earlier show, I know Richard was having problems with his sound going in and out. So he wished me luck on this show and
right.
Fingers crossed so far,
well,
you know,
it was
doing
funny
good.
When I read it, he sent me the same message and I read it. And as I was reading it, the music cut out twice. And I was like, oh, well. But I haven't heard any problems since, so I'm glad you're not having any issues. Probably two different shows.
Oh, that's right.
Two different shows. Yeah, that's helpful. Yeah. Anyway, I'm glad it's working.
All right, and up next we have Madness of King George's Pet Rat by Yorkie Buff. It was the blackberries that undid her. Their greenage juiciness licking at a spare tire punctured by sheer greed, snatched from the rampant jaws of a purple combine harvester. Hayrick bound cross beard stubble, wrapped up blimps floating overhead, Alice blubbering on bald March hairs, clocks striking Roman numerals, tears drinking in labels, dark dominoes fall, clack, clack, clack. Pink Dave disappears down tunnels, meeting huge Empire State Badgers, hugging, falling into brush bristles on feathers, wound round ivory handle, soft bed landing, a world filled with sticky toffee apples, gluing bone eyes together, mumbling, stars and corn go out for want of books, belfry bells roll by idiots, struck dumb, foxes small as flies, hunted by snails and powdered wigs. End poem. And Yorkie, thank you. And Yorkie Buff wrote to the quote, so she went into the garden to cut a cabbage leaf to make an apple pie, and at the same time, a great she-bear coming up the street pops his head into the shop. What? No soap? So he died, and she very imprudently married the barber. And your thoughts in this poem.
I had a couple thoughts until you read me the prompt. I mean, what? But it's okay. I'm easily confused, and we know it. I thought the write was very good. You know, I liked the lead into it because I found it very intriguing. It was the blackberries that undid her, their green gauge juiciness licking at the spare tire punctured by sheer greed, snatched from the rampant jaws of the purple combine harvester. I thought, now that's an intriguing lead into this, and it kind of makes you want to see what's going on from there, which it did, you know, made me want to read further. And then this other, I'm trying to figure it out. I could go with dark dominoes. A world filled with sticky toffee apples, gluing bone eyes together, mumbling. Stars and corn go out for want of books. Belfry bells rode by idiots, struck dumb foxes. Smallest flies hunted by snails and powdered wigs. It's just as, well, it's just as confusing to me as the prompt was, but that's okay because I think it's supposed to be, you know what I mean? You know, they were trying to...
Yes, exactly.
The craziness of it, and I think they did a fine job with that. All kinds of imagery, and it just is all glued together. They're definitely intriguing and fun and abstract, you know, in a lot of ways when you kind of glue it together. So it reminds you of a puzzle. Well, all the pieces are the same shape.
Exactly.
And, you know, and when they're all the same shape, you can put them anywhere. So, you know, you just move the words around it and make it intriguing and fun and, you know, confusing. But that's okay because I think it's supposed to be that way. And I like it. I like it. It's a very nice job, Yorkie Buff. I look forward to you. Look forward to you. It's kind of like when you write things. And I go, what did she do? How did she get that?
Yep. I love the way the Yorkie Buff's mind worked with this one. And you're right. It is a perfect fit with the prompt, which is one of the reasons that I gave it gold. Because, well, first of all, when I chose to put that prompt up, I knew it was just one of the most ridiculous prompts I have ever put up in my 6 years of putting up prompts. And it was just downright silly and have you going, what the heck is going on here? You know, I'm sure people who have read all of Samuel Foote's works are going, aha, I know exactly what's going on here. I am not one of those people. But, yeah, I mean, Yorkie Buff, they had great wordplay, wonderful imagery. You know, I like the, of course, the Alice in Wonderland brought in, Alice blubbering on bald March hares, clocks striking Roman numeral tears, drinking in labels. Just delightful all the way through. You know, I did kind of get the thought of that it was a story right with there's silliness to it, but I also got the idea that there's a representation on greed that becomes the downfall of idiots. I especially got that within the last stanza with a world filled with sticky toffee apples, gluing bone eyes together, mumbling stars, the corn go out for want of books, you know, and the idea that, you know, sometimes you just can't stop the madness. And the imagery of snails and powdered wigs, I mean, really, there's so much of this that just had me smiling and cracking up.
It makes me want to burst and step away from the bottle.
Step away from the bottle.
It was well put together and clever. I liked it.
Absolutely. Either step away from the bottle or step away from the hookah pipe.
That's right.
One or the other.
I don't want to insinuate anything like that.
That's really
funny.
It sure is. All right. Well, let's see what we have next. Dolling the World by Arch Hayes. And, Jean, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Sure. Okay. Dolling the World by Arch Hayes. When it comes to sameness, he holds the scepter, not with brilliance, but with the monotony of persistent drizzle. He is the fog that covers the vibrant sunrise. Not only dull himself, he makes others seem dull as well. His words, not unlike the drone of an endless rain, flows into minds, transforming fertile thoughts to gray slush, stultifying the words from the discourse of others, leaving only their boring opinions in its wake. His presence is a stifling haze that obscures vision, not a cloak of mystery, but a blanket of tedium, bleaching the brilliance, washing away all signs of intelligence in his company. Even brilliant phrases adopt a deadly power. In every discussion, the dull droplet he imparts falls not with a splash, but a harsh, relentless drip. Yet, within this drizzle, within this fog and mist, a curious truth of existence is captured and mirrored. For each drizzle, too nurtures life, nourishes the earth. In the constant repetitive rain, a rhythm still exists. And even in fog, obscured visions foster introspection. In the dominion of the dull, depths may also be discovered. The harbinger of dullness and monotony he reigns, the purveyor of grayness where no vibrancy remains. End poem.
Great read there, Gene. And I'm not really sure because he didn't have it in his AN or attached to his poem, but I'm pretty sure the Samuel quote prompt that he wrote to was the quote, "He is not only dull himself, he is the cause of dullness in others." Which I think it would definitely fit really well. I love the bite in this, and wonderful imagery and metaphors. And what's great to me is this is really a classic, timeless poem because, you know, with the mention of the scepter and the cloak, you could go back in time, and I won't get into political discussions, but you can imagine this applying to many politicians over the past, you know, couple decades or so, who we've all had to watch and deal with, you know, but it really speaks well on that person who thinks really too highly of themselves. Really wonderful write on speaking on how hanging out with some people is like being in a cold rain. I really particularly like this part that said, in every discussion a dull droplet he imparts falls not with a splash but a harsh relentless drip. Yet within this drizzle, within this fog and mist, the curious truth of existence is captured and mirrored. And I also really like the phrase, the harbinger of dullness. I thought that was quite clever, because instead of the harbinger of death, he is the harbinger of dullness. So, wonderfully right and very well done. And your thoughts?
You know, I have to agree with you, ma'am. That was actually the stanza I was going to grab, that and the one below it. For each drizzle, too, nurtures life, nourishes the earth. In the instant, repetitive rain, a rhythm still exists. And even in fog, obscured visions foster introspection in the dominion of the dull. Depth may also be discovered. The harbinger of dullness and monotony reigns, the purveyor of grayness where no vibrancy remains. I like those lines as well, the last stanza and the couplet. I think that they kind of turned it around a little bit and made it a little bit brighter, you know, a little bit brighter. But I think each stanza here was really well penned and nicely put together. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the right quote, because the last line of the first stanza, not only dull himself, he makes others seem dull as well. So I'm pretty sure that you nailed that one on which prompt it was. But it was really nicely put together and well stated. So nice job, and thank you so much for the share. Absolutely. Arch A. Names I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, they're fairly new, but I've seen their rights on the After Midnight shows, like at least a couple times. But you know, it's always great to see new names and you know new poets being inspired by our prompts.
Right.
Very good. Yeah. All right. Well, up next we have John Thomas Liked to Think of Himself as Steely by Time Teller. And it goes like this. John Thomas liked to think of himself as Steely, not rusty instead. Voluminous, bright, and silver, soared like strong to others. He's simply Eely. He wasn't flaky or moody, rather thought himself reliable. And you know what? He considered himself somewhat groovy. His shoes were pointy with over garters of white fluffy lace. His trousers or pants were silk, a fetching color, a pinkish ilk, much like his face. His shirt, a bellowing white cloud of pleats with folds that ruffled under him in a bold faux pas, of stately fashion, was simply much like an overstated rustic seat. Over everything, a large overcoat, embroidered in gold and red stitching, buttons with East India Company logos, shone like a sun driving plebeians local. All in all, as he minced along Trafalgar Square, heading south towards the Thames, swinging an ebony cane with a narwhal tooth handle in his right hand, whilst holding a handkerchief to his nose with his left. All in all, he looked not so dashing, like a cavalry officer, he imagined, giving some Frenchie a damn right thrashing, but somewhat like the feathers one might see in hats. In modern-day terms, he tries to be nonchalant, yet the plebeians identify him as a prat. In fact, all in all, he was a ship in full sail on the high seas of dirt and sewage that spewed forth like the spout from a blowhole of a whale. With a positively healthy attitude, it flows the same direction John Thomas was going, running down the street towards the Thames. This is a mighty city, shame about the stench, he thought. John Thomas is on his way to the bank to draw funds. He's going to finance the buying of guns, not to fire himself, but for money to be made for personal wealth. and John Thomas wasn't going to miss out on a deal as he minced his way along excitedly with a letter of royal seal. All his money and ill-gotten gains from selling poor slaves, defrauding the natives, and convincing others to invest in non-existent trains. Put it all down on one great last deal. He's going to be rich, rolling in clover, so much so he can afford to buy that mansion to retire to Kent, not too far from Dover. At the bank, they were looking troubled. Disasters at sea has them somewhat novelled. There's no cash to pay from the vault. It's serious, you know. The well-to-do will riot and revolt. They'll stampede and whine about shares, dividends, investments, and their locked away treasures, treasured wares. Oh, pity us, everyone. Come on, it's true. The sea is treacherous, no more a friend. Unlike all of you, the well-to-do. What a palaver, what a sorry ass do. There's simply no money. Borrow from us, we've taken it all from you. Now, that's nothing new. Mr. John Thomas, we are afraid to say we are sorry because that includes poor, poor, ignorant you. End poem. And time for the prompt. One who preserves all the exterior decencies of ignorance. And your thoughts on this rite?
You know, I think the rite was really well done. I mean, it was a whole story told. And, you know, from what I see what the prompt was, I say that he really nailed that very well. Not only in the last line, but throughout. I mean, he just didn't point it out so clearly, you know, until he got there. But let me see now. So much happening here. At the bank, they're looking troubled. Disasters at sea has them somewhat nobbled. There's no cash to pay from the vault. It's serious, you know. The well-to-do will riot and revolt. They'll stampede and whine about shares, dividends, investments, and their locked away treasured wares. Oh, pity us, everyone. Come on, it's true. The sea is treacherous. No more a friend, unlike all of you, the well-to-do. You know, kind of leads to people that are crying about something, losing some, and some people have none. You know, they're oblivious to really what goes on around them. It's all about them. That's what I got out of that. You know, I hope it's right. But I think it was really well done. And he pulled the prompt in nicely in the very last line just touched on the prompt and it made the rest of it kind of click. You know. What a palaver, what a sorry ass you. There's simply no money. Borrow from us. We've taken it all from you. Now that's nothing new. Interesting. Just really nicely pulled together. So great job, Time Teller. I enjoyed it. A lot of work in this one. So, great thoughts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. He did definitely put a lot of work into this, and it was entertaining. And what I like is that I really feel like besides being a great take on the prompt, it kind of paid tribute to Samuel Foote. Who was born in 1720 and died in 1777. He was a dramatist, actor, and theater manager who was known for his comedic acting and writing. And he actually turned the loss of one of his own legs from a riding accident into a comedic opportunity. I like how with his use of the language and setting that Time Teller has used, he brings us back in time. He uses that kind of sardonic humor to take a look at a well-to-do man who doesn't see himself as anyone else but quickly gets pointed out that, yeah, that is you. We're also talking about you. When we talk about the rich, the well-to-do, you know, those people who are going to come riling after us, we mean you just as much as any other ones of them. This really had me smiling, and I thought it was quite a witty story about a man who comes face to face with the reality of his own folly. So, amazing writing, very well done. Ah, right. Yeah, I thought so. There was definitely, this was a contest that had a lot of just amazing writes. Very entertaining. All right, let's see what we have next. All right. Up next, we have Drops of Legacy by A.R. Mundell. And Jean, go ahead, please, and give that a read.
Okay, here we go. Drops of Legacy by A.R. Mundell. I don't know why. I have to say it myself. Nothing personal. I don't get it. Knowledge everywhere, untapped beneath your tips. A simple scroll, a click, a roll. It's there within the blink. Yet how many drops do we take in? Those words don't often sink through skin. We're male, it's ocean, and all can swim. Most choose to pursue other things. We've grown so good at flash distractions, dazzling eyes to dull the mind, that take us from the arms of knowledge to laugh with any means we find. Oh, how those thirsty scholars of old would weep with joy at such a trove, for just a puddle, just a drop, they'd have sold it all down to their clothes. And here we are with all on tap, so much it floods into the streets, yet we make our minds so waterproof and drink soft drinks in its stead. End poem.
Great read there, Jean. And Amy wrote to the quote, when land and house are gone and spent, then learning is most excellent. I really liked this one. I gave it the bronze because, first of all, it had great imagery, a wonderful flow, within it, a nice lyrical quality. I like how she starts out with knowledge everywhere, like a nod towards the right or the quote that says, water everywhere and not a drop to spare. And I thought this really was just a thoughtful write all the way through on how too often people ignore opportunities to learn. It makes me think of that quote that says, you know, you learn something new every day, and you don't necessarily learn something new every day, especially if you remain stagnant within your mind, like you don't actually try. But I think what you can do is you can give yourself the opportunity to learn something new every day. And I think what Amy is saying here is she's saying that opportunity is being presented to you over and over again, and you're not taking advantage of it. And I really liked this all the way through, but especially we've grown so good at flash distractions, dazzling eyes to dull the mind, that take us from the arms of knowledge to laugh with any memes we find. You know, and I love a good meme, you know, and a good laugh. But, you know, oftentimes we are so focused on social media and the quick fix that we don't bother to dig deeper into reading more about a subject and actually learning. So great write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Leave me out of it, Jean. Just leave me out of it. You know, I thought it was nicely penned, and I thought it was a good take on that prompt. She puts a disclaimer here, intended as an extreme generalization about society as a whole. There are obviously many people who do use the Internet for learning, and that soft drinks can still teach people many things. I think that, but there's also a lot of truth to that. Yet how many drops do we take in? Those words don't often sink through skin. Where now it's ocean and all can swim, most choose to pursue other things. We've grown so good at flash distractions, dazzling eyes to dull the mind, and take us from the arms of knowledge to laugh with any means we find. You know, we do. People miss the opportunity. What hits me is, you know, people say, get on the internet, you know, but they don't have to go and, like, if they need it, they go look it up and they find it. Because it's all right there. And, you know, when she says about the scholars, where the heck is it? Oh, how those thirsty scholars of old would weep with joy at such a trove. For just a puddle, just a drop, they'd have filled it all down to their clothes. And, you know, there's a lot of truth in that because before the internet, people would have just loved to have everything at their fingertips, to have all of that information. You know, I mean, gosh, when I was a kid, we had to go through 37 books of the encyclopedia just to find the one thing we were looking for. And then we had to figure it all out because we had to read it. Flip pages, you know.
Right.
You know, So it's kind of crazy that there is a lot of truth in this. There really is. You know, it's not everybody. You know, you can't speak on everybody, but it definitely is. It's accurate in a lot of ways. So I think Amy did an excellent job with this, and nice taking the prompt, Amy. I like it very much.
Me too. And yes, and of course we had the good old Dewey Decimal System when we had to hunt something down in a library. Yep.
Just for God, you know, a lot of stuff done, you know. We had to think before we could think, you know. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly. But, all right, well, let's see what we got next. Up next we have What's the Difference by Thomas B. And he goes like this. What is the difference between a responsible action and an excuse? How do I know what to believe? You tell me stories about alarms that didn't go off, tires that were magically flattened at the wrong time. Is it the truth that lets you be free of everything you agreed to do? Is this what they mean? The truth shall set you free? Where does that leave me? Your reasons no more than a path to be relieved of being responsible for the problems caused when you broke your word. So as your boss, I should agree, smile sweetly, and tell you it's all fine with me? Who are we kidding? I never know truth from lie, and if you must know, I don't really care. There's a job that needs to be done. When it's not, no time for fun. You come in late. All I want to hear is, what can I do to take care of problems created by my being late? Let me clean up for messes created and do it without being asked. This tells me you mean what you say when you screw up. You clean up. No excuses for letting it get this way. Yeah, what is the difference between one who can be trusted and one who only whines? One is full of excuses and gets nothing done. The other is the powerful one, their word number one. And Tom wrote, to he who is good at excuses is generally good for nothing else. And Jean, your thoughts on this, right?
You know, I think he nailed those prompts. I really do. You know, I never know the truth from lie, and if you must know, I don't really care. There's a job that needs to be done. When it's not, no time for fun. You come in late, all I want to hear is, what can I do to take care of the problems created by my being late? Let me clean up for the messes created and do it without being asked. This tells me you mean what you say. When you screw up, you clean up. No excuses for letting it get in this way. You know, because it really doesn't matter why you're late. You're late, you know. And, you know, you just have to hunker down and make up for it. No matter what the problem is. you know, you have to bypass, like, why, and just move on to the issue at hand. Because if you're making an excuse, apparently you've missed out on something that was supposed to be done. But I know I was, like, so lame on my part. But I think that Thomas did a great job addressing that prompt. And, you know, he put it out there in a story form where, you know, you're reading it, and, yeah, you know, I didn't make it because blah, 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 blah. You know, the story tells it. And then when you get there, you know, your boss doesn't want to hear it, you know, because it says, where does that leave me? Your reason's no more than a path to be relieved of being responsible for the problems you caused when you broke your word. So as your boss, I should agree, smile sweetly, and tell you it's all fine with me. But we'll be kidding. You know, because you do. You have to be accountable and responsible. And, you know, you can't just give lame reasons as to why. You know, it doesn't get you anywhere. You know, you have to be prompt and be on it and not make, you know, beat somebody's ear about it. While you're standing there trying to explain everything, you're just getting further behind. So, it's well done, Thomas, and thanks for sharing. Great job.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, yeah, your great observations there are so true. I mean, you know, I don't think there's nothing wrong with giving reasons, but beyond that, you have to do more. You know, you can't just give your excuse or give your, you know, reasons and expect not to make up for your actions. You know, and really, to me, this speaks on the idea that you know, actions speak louder than words. Really an amazing right that, as you were saying, it's just spot on to the prompt. Great take on it. You know, sometimes, you know, some people are all talk and no action, and those are the kind of people that you really can't trust, that you really can't depend on. And I really did like that part where it said, who are we kidding? I never know truth from lying. If you must know, I don't really care. There's a job that needs to be done. When it's not, no time's fun. You come in late, all I want to hear is, what can I do to take care of problems created by my being late? And like you were saying, Dean, it's all about taking responsibility for our actions. I mean, even if you accidentally slept in or something happened that was beyond your control, you still need to step up, you know, and say, hey, I'm sorry, let me make up for the time missed. And this goes not only for work, but anywhere in life, you know, anywhere. Amazing write by Tom, and very well done.
Well, I think I actually worked with that person once, maybe twice.
I'm pretty sure we all have.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But, you know, you just get tired of it. Like, how many stories? I've had many a reason for not being there, you know, being at work on time. And they stole the roof off of my car. That was one. And I said, and I would go into work, and I just look at him, I shake my head and say, I can't make this up. You know? Like, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I kind of felt like I was in those shoes for a while. But it's crazy. It is crazy. Okay, Bama, I'm going to be quiet now so you can keep moving.
But that is so true. That is so true. I think many of us have, you know, worked with that kind of person who's always got an excuse. You know, and, yep.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, up next we have Amateur Poetry by S. Sharp. And, Jean, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Oh, well, give it a whirl.
Amateur Poetry by S. Sharp. Something's afoot in familiarity. Wisdom dances toe-to-toe with foolishness. One hand in another. A bow, a curtsy, a dip, a twirl. Head spinning like an unbalanced top. Wobbling like subjugated morals. Whipped in the cellar of amateur poets or dank candlelit garrets. Typed one finger tapping out. dismembered words of wisdom, an interrobang, stripped of its bang, lonely wandering, the page disoriented, questioning everything. Words chained, shackled, rankled, sacrificed, mistakenly hung in the wordsmith's gallows, neck snapped, twisted, braided amongst the whispers of lore seekers, their heads bowed, genuflect, severed in the guillotine, dropped off, left broken, just syllables in the dictionary. And
great read there, Jean. A wonderful creative write by Scott. I really liked this. I like that he put in his AN, all my poetry is amateur, like armchair quarterbacks, driveway mechanics, etc. And if no other way, because I get paid nothing to create it. However, also like Foote quotes, they attempt to wax poetic, expressing great intellect and humor, often missing the mark. Foote breaks a leg, I break fingers. I did like the humor in that. I kind of get the impression he's not actually a big fan of Samuel Foote. From his AN, but that is quite all right because, you know what, I like that he was inspired. And sometimes you can find great wit in response poems, to prompts that people aren't particularly drawn to for whatever reason. I really liked his use of wordplay in this. One hand and another, a bow, a curtsy, a dip, a twirl, head spinning like an unbalanced top, wobbling like subjugated morals, whipped in the cellar of amateur poets or dank candlelit garrets, typed one finger tapping out dismembered words of wisdom, an interbang stripped of its bang, lonely wandering the page disoriented, questioning everything. I really like how this talks about the idea of how sometimes as poets, we brutally butcher language, and other times we make it so beautiful. It can just be so hit or miss. I also like genuflect severed in the guillotine, lopped off, left broken, just syllables in a dictionary. I feel like the left broken, just syllables in a dictionary really speaks on the idea of when you're just throwing in words to have words rather than the emotional meaning behind them. Really quite a clever write with great wordplay that speaks on the amateur entertainment for the masses. So very cool and very well done. And your thoughts, Steve?
Well, I thought it was a clever piece. I said the poor words all mutilated, because that's really what it came down to. And I liked his use of wordsmith's gallows. I thought that was kind of a neat phrase there. But I did pick up all that last stanza there. Mistakenly hung in the wordsmith's gallows, neck snapped, twisted, braided amongst the whispers of gore seekers, their heads bowed, genuflect, severed in the guillotine, lopped off, left broken, just syllables in the dictionary. I thought that whole thing was just really well said, because it gives you this whole thing about words just being totally mutilated. I just thought that's what came to mind. So I really enjoyed the piece, and you're probably right. You probably didn't like Mr. Foote too much. But, get those fingers all, what do they call it? Splint it up. Splint it up, Scott.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I like it.
It's the things that get done. I don't know. But it's all good. It's all good. So nice work.
It really is. Great comment there. And all right, so that was the last of our Samuel Foote carryovers. And now we have some carryovers from the contest with poets for poems inspired by the art of Kees van Dongen. And I'm going to, I put up first Carnival of Love by Betty Page. And Betty, since she wrote a song parody, was nice enough to supply us with a recording. So here we go. Carnival of Love. Whimsical daydreams allure in fantasy land, where all dreams come true. All kinky freaks gaze Miss Betty Page. Tonight there'll be a show to fright in New Orleans. Night's vampires will have affairs. Stars of angels, lustful lairs sets the scene. Sinful men, feral cats, rock and rollers kissing within her tongue-tied sweet desire. Wicked ways, Betty Page will open new worlds. Luscious, erotic Betty Page performs for freaks each Saturday, Cirque du Soleil. Night's vampires will dance and sing as Betty Page swings high, she sings, choose your fate. Sexy ways attract vivid, exotic, wild affection, she's best, second to none. In her course, sweetie in dungeons, whipping her wool. Her show's vicious with all her tricks, Miss Betty Page performs so slick, melodic sound. Held in her cage, she'll dominate, bend back her legs, she'll entertain. Pinned helpless round, posing in cute ways with sweet seduction, fine wicked time intensified for all. Cause tonight, Betty Page, she's seeking new thrills.
Oh,
end poem.
Bravo, Betty, wonderful singing right there. I am so glad you made a recording. Thank you for that. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And this worked really well, because not only was it a great parody of the song by the Beatles, but it also, if you take a look at the artwork in the contest from Keith Van Dongen, you'll see that a lot of his artwork was focused on, you know, performers, especially from the circus. I have to say, I think Rex would have gotten a big kick out of this one. In fact, I'll have to make sure to point it out to him so that he gives it a listen. I love how she writes about herself, but instead of like a first-person narrative, it's a second-person narrative. And really, this just has me smiling. It's fun. It's sexy and dark. A great parody, you know, saucy and entertaining. And I really like it all the way through, but especially the first verse with all kinky freaks gaze Miss Betty Page. Tonight there'll be a show to fright in New Orleans. You know, and sinful men, feral cats, rock and rollers kissing within her tongue-tied sweet desires. Wicked ways, Betty Page, will open new worlds. Just thoroughly entertaining all the way through and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I have to agree. I thought it was a great parody by Betty. The audio was great. It was good that she sang it, because something definitely gets lost, you know, sometimes when you have a parody and it's not sung, you kind of lose a little bit. But I'm with you. I took that first stanza as well, because, you know, it's like she set the whole stage with this, you know what I mean, and led beautifully into everything else that she did. All kinky freaks gaze, Miss Betty Page. Tonight there'll be a show for fright in New Orleans. You know, night's vampires will have affairs. Like, it's so full of all this imagery. You know, all these, well, I shouldn't say imagery, but each one of these things does bring something to mind. So, to me, that's imagery. You know, that's the way I see it. It's not like the pink blah blah, you know, it's not giving you a whole bunch of that. It's just giving you images to flash through your mind with it. And I think that that really was well done in this, definitely. So, Betty, unique piece, and you did a great job with it. So I'm glad I was here for this. So thanks a lot. Thanks
yeah.
for sharing. Yeah, you know, it was a good piece. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it was.
Fun and entertaining, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, and let's see what we have next. We have Behind the Curtain by J.A. Hartley. And go ahead, please, Jean, and give that a read for us.
I will do my best. Okay, Behind the Curtain by J.A. Hartley. The train's eyes are light in the night. When you step down, we lock souls and cross the glinting tracks arm in arm. And drink green juice from a long blue bottle. And smoke and grin, for we made it, didn't we? We've run away to the circus. See? I am here, you have come, and we said what we said we would do. All those long weeks ago, when we first fell in love. Our drunken eyes see the big top in the starlit field, where the horses stir and lions growls and elephants blares. Sound where the crowd applaud and the carriages clatter. And they rip our tickets and squish us in. Curtain high aside, smoke thick, and in our seats with our hidden drink, we see her glide the sawdust ring on an ivory horse with thin prick eyes. And we nuzzle up in our disguises, living lovers free in glorious sin. End poem.
Great read, Jean. And what a wonderful write by J.A. Hartley. I really liked their take on the prompt. I like that this is a story you write about two young lovers, or at least I would guess young, who run away from the circus. You know, the idea of running away from the circus is really such an old-fashioned concept. I don't even know if old-fashioned is the right word, but honestly, like, you don't really fear of people wanting to run away to the circus anymore. You know, they're too busy on them. But I really like the storytelling in this and the imagery. Let's see here. The train's eyes are light in the night. When you step down, we lock souls and cross the glinting tracks arm in arm. I like, that's another thing that adds a nice, a yesteryear quality to this, is there's not a lot of traveling by train anymore. So, you know, it's kind of, it feels, it feels like something from yesteryear, something from days gone by. And of course, I just really like the story told of young lovers who are very captivated by the circus and captivated with each other and the idea of seeking adventures in life and love. And you could almost see them living in a society that rejects such ideas. And then with this kind of a not give a damn attitude, our drunken eyes see the big top in the starlit field where the horses stir and lions growl and elephants blare, sound where the crowd applaud and the carriage clatter. Wonderful use of imagery all the way through and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, I thought that this was a nice story told in this piece. I mean, because there was a story. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. Nice take on the prompt. And I thought there was nice imagery throughout. And I grabbed up that last stanza, which was pretty pretty descriptive. I thought it painted a picture. A drunken eye see the big top in the starlight field where the horses stir, and lions growls and elephants blares, sound where the crowd applaud and the carriages clatter, and they rip our tickets and swish us in. curtain high aside, smoke sticking in our seats with our hidden drinks, we see her glide the sawdust ring on an ivory horse with the pinprick eyes, and we nuzzle up in our disguises, living lovers, free in glorious sin. And, you know, that stanza definitely encompasses the image, but it gives you so much more, you know. So nicely done, and great take on the prompt. Thank you, Jay.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like what you said about how it encompasses, but I like that it captures the image, but encompasses mm-hmm. so much more because of the image being mainly focused on the woman who's doing the stunt riding on the horse, and the audience is in the background. So, mm-hmm. you know, as you were pointing out, J.A. does a wonderful job of telling a story that takes place in the circus and bringing a couple in the audience to the foreground. So,
mm-hmm.
very cool. And great writing and great comment. All right. Well, up next we have It's Showbiz, Going Gone Geometric by Liquid Mind Forever. And it goes like this. I refuse to be idolized, put upon a pedestal, garlanded with dead flowers, later to be tucked inside with memorabilia, stuck in black triangles, glued into red hard-covered scrapbooks, or cubed by nude hysteria, glibly flipping through flowered hours, later to be showered with hyssop on painted ponies by coward phonies, acrimiously devoured, newly scoured fop. Give me flamboyance or give me slow, triangulated death. Lord Almighty, have mercy, firstly, however thirsty. The parched tongue searches, rehearses, disperses answers to questions, which never should be asked at task. I throw a handful of cubed chrysanthemums torn from the belly of mother's circle, lick the stem, a chem, thrust my lancelot, scarabed into sheaves of strawberry lime Cambrian, strobe, dangle, disheveled, roast pig, a keg, a swig, the Freeman jig, dig a hole, once whole, paid the toll, lost the roll, dole by dole, harness and foal, no soul, powdered wig, bosoms big, late night gigs, portobello digs, rustic jamboree, gypsy caravans, gutted lambs, dancing I am, lead me into angled temptation, hope's salvation, deprivation's line of need. Round and round on the merry-go-round, appointed, painted ponies carousel, 2 cents a pound, paid down, ground to be found, a mound of paper mache, plaster cast, parasol, sell pell-mell, circus attraction, 16 cents a ticket, get your peanuts here, hefty thighs, zebra size, rugs, shrugs, and slugs, lug nuts and butts, sluts and ruts, strut under the wheel wagon to get the isosceles on gear. I refuse accolades to the nth. Hate, parade, married charades, water cascades. I infuse mermaids at right angles. Masquerade getting laid while morning fades. Amusements, 25 cents under the tent. What's meant will be cursively sent. Amethyst, carnelian, cerise, painted nonsense, hence prehensile sails to no avail. We rail, wish to fail, madness prevails, flies past jail, fresh ale, galloping, Jehoshaphat, and that, in a tub of squared fat at point blank, I refuse to be pickled or lined in brine or thought divine. The pine we dine, two of a kind, ball and twine, please define horse and pony show. Gotta go blow out the candles at right angles, square, cube, point blank, black triangles, and circular Botox line and poem. And wow, that's a great bit of wordplay all the way through. Your thoughts?
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's a lot of wordplay throughout this entire piece. Going, geometric. The geometric is like so brought into play throughout, which makes me laugh. You know, I'm like, okay. You know, I refuse to be idolized, put upon a pedestal garlanded with dead flowers, later to be tucked inside with memorabilia stuffed in black triangles. You know, and then we go down, we got cubes. It was just clever. I guess, you know, because the image is not a bunch of straight lines or absolute, it's a little bit modeled, better word, I guess, that you can take that geometric kind of thing out of it because it's not... They're not just perfect images, let's put it that way. And I like that. Somehow it pulls together really well. But give me flamboyance, or give me slow triangulated death. Lord Almighty, have mercy. Firstly, however thirsty, the parched tongue searches, rehearses, disperses, answers to questions. There's just so much going on in here. It's amazing, you know? You get the third... vignette is like, okay, you know, and you get through that one, and then round and round on the merry-go-round, a pointed painted pony's carousel, 2 cents a pound, paid down, ground to be found, sound, amount of paper mache plaster, cast parasol, sell pell-mell. Just, you know, I mean, it's just all this, you know, all these images coming at you. Like boom, 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 you know, and you got to keep up with it, you know, to actually get the imagery down. And I think that's pretty challenging, you know, and I do admire the fact that she can put all this wordplay together and come up with something of this length with such great thoughts behind it. So excellent job, Deborah, and thanks for sharing. Pretty clever piece. Nicely done.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. And I like your observation on the artwork and how she matched with that really well, because you're right, because, you know, there's not exact lines, but you can see the shapes, like the woman standing on the horse. You see the triangle shape between her two legs, you know, and you see the round shape of the audience and you know, and really just wonderful use of that triangulation and geometry within the artwork that with her wording, Liquid Mind Forever captures. You know, as we were saying, great wordplay, amazing imagery and metaphors. And she grabs, as always with her writing, I think she grabs your attention right away with, "I refuse to be idolized, put upon a pedestal garlanded with dead flowers, later to be tucked inside with memorabilia stuck in black triangles." You know, it's that whole idea of wanting to do, I think, to do something for yourself because you enjoy it, rather than that you want the world to idolize you. Let's see, wonderful lines all the way through. Another part I really liked was round and round on the merry-go-round, a pointed painted pony carousel, 2 cents a pound, paid down, ground to be found, sound, a mound, a paper mache, plaster cast, carousel, sell, pell-mell. I like those lines because they kind of speak to me on the idea of life running around in a circle, and everybody trying to get their fair share. I also like that you threw in the phrase galloping Jehoshaphat. I felt like if I had been paying closer attention, I could have said that in a nice Southern accent, and it would have worked really well. I don't know about nice, because, you know, it's not natural for me, but, you know, but I did like that. I thought it was wonderfully entertaining. A brilliant imagery and metaphors, a wonderful use of inner and end rhyme, and truly, to me, an excellent write on refusing to be displayed for the shallow amusement of others. So, definitely very well done. All right, and let's see what we have next. All
right.
What's that?
I said I'll be right back.
Okay, no problem. Sure, no problem. All right. Let's see. Up next we have If a Man Paints You by S. Sharp. And it goes like this. If a man paints you. Oh, sorry, that was the title. Sorry. All right, let me try this again. It goes like this. Men paint them nude, empty vessels crossing the Atlantic, nothing but seashells, earlobes, standing in blank white rooms, listening to white noise, aching for silence. Gawk at them, see-through gowns, spectacles, rainbows, fireworks, sunsets soaked into shrinking meiosis of the pupil, dying stars, imploding, black holes of want lust hung like tongues on walls and smoking rooms, huffing on a lungful of poetry and poem. And what a brilliant write, I think, by Scott. Amazing imagery and metaphors. It was powerful and edgy. I like how he writes on the idea of women being treated as empty vessels of beauty that have no other worth. I gave this one the bronze, and I thought not only was it a great take on the artwork itself and the chosen prompt, but also kind of gave a nod towards the artist's style, because Van Dongen had a reputation for his sensuous work that at times had garish portraits, especially of women. And, you know, I'm not actually 100% sure which, I should take a look. Now, let's see here. I can't remember if Scott put his, prompt 12. So he did prompt 12, which I think was one of the ones that had a woman with a see-through dress. In it. Let me scroll down here real quick. Yes, there was actually five people in the painting. There were three men who were all clothed, and the two women in the painting were wearing dresses, but the dresses were see-through. And I think this is a great take on that chosen prompt, on the idea of being painted by a male and leaving the male characters in the painting fully clothed with nothing peeking out, and yet allowing the women to be fully exposed, almost as a sentiment of vulnerability. You know, just amazing imagery all the way through and very well done. And are you back, Dean?
I am. Sorry about that.
No,
I'm just reading over the t-shirt real quick, so.
Sure.
You know what, Pam, if you want, we can just, I can just leave a written comment on this when we're done.
That sounds good. That sounds good. All right, so that was the last of our Van Dongen carryovers. So now we are going to go into the Carol Nelson inspired write. Now, Carol Nelson is a current artist. She's still living. She's still painting. I actually posted a link to her website for people to check out her artwork, and I highly recommend her because, well, she's very talented, and she runs a gambit between she does abstract and surrealism art, and she also does portraits, all of which she does, and her portraits aren't surreal or abstract. They're very straightforward portrait styles, beautifully done. She really captures the personality of people. Now, I, of course, you know, with this being Break On Through, where I tend to focus more on abstract or surrealism art, I did choose her artwork that's more in that vein. What's really cool is, like, she, to me anyways, one of the really cool things is she's from Colorado, where the Rocky Mountains, or at least part of the Rocky Mountains are, and you can see within her use of color, you know, and some of her paintings are like, they're surreal, but it's obviously like a forest, or they're surreal and it's obviously flowers. But other ones, you kind of see the idea of the layers that you would find within mountains or stone, or, you know, like almost like a whole, like, you know, the canyon type feel. To me, her artwork is stunning with its use of color and imagery. And like I said, I just very much highly recommend that when given an opportunity, people check it out. And all right, with that being said, and people can tell I like to bounce all over the place from with prompts from, you know, artists or poets that come from the 1700s to current ones. So, and let's see what we have next. All right, and we have On Your Memorial Wall of Stone, I Bloom Again by Jenny the Deep. And Jean, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
You betcha. On Your Memorial Wall of Stone, I Bloom Again by Jenny the Deep. Excretions cover the cold, hard floor, as my pale, sliced-up body is nevermore. Smears of blood drying under the beating sun, laying lifeless, stiff as board, was itself elimination. As the city is at ease sleeping, my family is kneeling beside me weeping. As they hold my nearly frozen hand, unresponsive, it's them unable to grasp. Among the copper and golden paper trees, you bury my non-beating heart under the leaves. Seasons passed as I eternally rest, but every spring in the stone wall I resurrect. Planted behind the paper trees of golden copper, I bloom into pink and white roses throughout the summer. End poem.
Great read there, Jean. And Jenny was inspired by multiple prompts. I really like the imagery in this. Another great dark write by Jenny. She gets visceral with the imagery of smears of blood drying under the beating sun, laying lifeless, stiff as a board, was itself elimination. Haunting lines. I also really like how she says, as the city is at ease sleeping, my family is kneeling beside me weeping. That idea that as one family is dealing with grief, the rest of the city is, you know, oblivious and, you know, just unaware of the pain going on for this one family. I also like how she says in the end, I bloom into pink and white roses throughout the summer. You know, the thought that, you know, from, you know, our death, new life springs forth. You know, the idea that the flowers are fed. So, wonderful write and very well done. And Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks. You know, it is a sad piece, you know, because it does deal with death and people coping with death. And, you know, excretions cover the heart, the cold, hard floor, as my pale, sliced-up body is nevermore. Smears of blood drying under the beating sun, laying lifeless, stiff as a board, as itself elimination was itself elimination. You know, that's it's a rough imagery. And I went over and I looked at, I scrolled through all the prompts, and I was like, ah, yeah, I'll never figure all this out, because you know, there's so many of them. And so I gave up that battle. I was like waiting for flowers to show up. I only saw one. But I think that really, you know, I was like, well, I think I'm out of my league here. But as the city is at ease sleeping, my family is kneeling beside me weeping. So, you know, she really leaves it up in the air as to what actually happened. You know, whether it was suicide or if it was murder or what, but then it goes, among the copper and golden paper trees, you bury my non-beating heart under the leaves. It's not like you buried me under the leaves, you know, just her non-beating heart. So it really gives me, like, it provokes a lot of questions in my mind as to what's going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I just, you know, it makes me wonder, who buried her heart? Who? Oh, oh, you know, selling an old owl. But, you know, it's clever, I mean, you know, because she does leave you in suspense with it. But inquiring minds do want to know, you know. There it goes, seasons passed as I eternally rest, but every spring in the stone wall I resurrect. So, you know, planted behind the paper trees or of gold and copper, I bloom into pink and white roses throughout the summer. Interesting, you know, because are we in a cemetery? Or did maybe somebody murder her and bury just her heart? Yes. Stranger things have happened in this lifetime. And is that why?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's kind of, I'm a little,
mysterious.
I feel like I have more questions than answers here. That's what I think. but it was nicely written, and I give you credit on that one, Jenny. So, yeah, I just, yeah, my mind takes me other places. I can't help it, so I'm sorry. Nice work, Jenny.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jenny does leave us with a bit of a mystery, you know, and wanting to know. Wanting to know more. So.
Right, exactly.
Yep. But great comment there. And I should give a shout out to Silent Tree, who's hanging out on the board and making comments. So, and I see Hats too. So hello, Silent Tree. Hello, Hats. Good to see you.
Hello, Hats. Hello, Silent Tree. I almost said Silent Tree. I don't know what the hell. My mouth is.
Yep. All right. So let's see. Do, 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 do. Grabbing the next one. And all right. Up next, we have Posey by Eric Svensson, and it goes like this. Impish breeze teases postulant plover tails, while mauve dreams maverick, neck cricked by patched purple pistachio, release, let go, drink in golden variance. Ambidextrous amber ambles along, songs out of time, call, calls to Vespers chime, garlic, glove, mauve, persist, release, let go, flake, golden variant, letters, struggle, anagram, out of time, lopsided, cross, uncompleted, rah, rah, Rasputin, lover of the Russian queen, memories of Stalingrad and Leningrad, patch, possession, dusk dolls, mind forever malls, tries to imprison time, plush bizarre heart, holds no prisoners, ushers in princely purple rain, floods deltaic globe, enamored by uncluttered fine art, doting dragonflies dart over purple African violet, vitriol vanquished by ventriloquist pistache, release, let go, amber's earthly ambrosial slate, end poem. And wonderful, wonderful right by Eric. But do you see what these men do to me? Do you see what they do? They not only does Eric not make a SoundCloud, but Rex isn't here, so he can read Eric's right and pronounce all the big words.
Well, Pam, I'll tell you, you did a fine job, and the word is pastiche.
Pastiche, okay. Ah,
yeah,
I should have known that.
Like, I know. Don't ask me how.
But
don't ask me what that. Something from my, I don't know, my other lifetime or something. But,
yeah, past life. Well, that makes sense.
Like,
I mean, you could have just known that for common sense, by common sense.
Well, it doesn't look like that's how you would pronounce it at all. Not to
it
me.
It doesn't.
So
And I probably pronounced it like five different ways, but I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you because I know you're going right into the comments, which is cool.
I don't mind chattering about it, to be honest to God. So this is really different for Eric, actually, because usually he has all these references coming in from everywhere. And this one, he basically stayed on this image, and he just used the colors and what he saw. And I thought he did a fine job with that. I mean, Impish Breeze teases postulant clever tales, while Mauve dreams maverick. It's an interesting kind of thought there. You know, Mauve dreams maverick. Clever. Net cricked by patched purple pastiche. Now you get into the purples of the piece itself, the image. Release, let go, drink in golden variants. You know, and he did. He just basically looked at the image and just grabbed each one of the shapes of color that he saw. And he kind of just created something out of it. And I think it was really well done. It was kind of abstract, like the image. You know, but you can kind of see what he's talking about. You know, ambidextrous amber ambles along, songs out of time call, calls to vespers chime. You know, it's kind of a, yeah, I think it just works somehow, which I like. I would never have thought of it this way myself. I would probably just say, I'm not going to work on these prompts because my brain doesn't, like, kind of click in like that. But garlic glove, mauve persist, released, let go, slake golden variants. Because slake is the drink, isn't it, Pam? So, yeah, I don't want to feel stupid on
it. It is, yes.
Okay, good. I'm like, wait a minute. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, it's... I don't know. I find it really intriguing, like where he came up with these lines that went with it. And letters struggle, anagram out of time, lopsided, crossed, incomplete. You know, and you do look and you see the letters on the books, or not books maybe, but in the image you see letters. And, you know, cross, incomplete, that's kind of, you know, easy to see. In a couple places pretty much, you know, there's lines with cross lines, but they're not completed, they're not finished. say that's pretty interesting right there. You know, Rah Rah Rasputin, lover of the Russian Queen, memories of Stalingrad and Leningrad. I'm not going to even pretend like I can tie that one in. I'm not that good. But I think it's just, his work is always so intriguing to me. I know I've used the word intriguing 15 times tonight in different poems and comments. But it is, because you look at that and then you read what he says and you're like, wow, what is this? What is that? Some of it I can kind of like almost see in my head, and other parts of it I'm like, I have no idea. But fine work anyway, just the same. For Pam. So I know he'll listen to it and he'll get a chuckle. But enamored by uncluttered fine art, dotting dragonflies dart over purple African violets. Vitriol vanquished from ventriloquist pastiche. Release, let go. Amber's earthy and rosal slick. I don't know. It's a lot of stuff going on in this image. But I definitely can't say that I get it all. But I get enough of it, I guess, to satisfy me and say I think I know where he's coming from in a lot of it. But, okay, Pam, I'm shutting up so you can tell me what the hell really is going on.
Well, I can make stuff up off the top of my head, but no, it's... I did have to look up the definition of pastiche, which is an artistic work in a style that imitates that of another work, artist, or period. Apparently I look up a lot of different words. My most recent searches being egress, pap, anthropomorphism, and recherche. So there you go. And I bet they're all from Eric. I bet you every single one of those words I've looked up recently were from one of Eric's poems.
Nope. One of them was from Luke J.R.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Yep. But, yeah.
Well, he liked it. Between Eric and Luke J.R., definitely. Oh, man, but I thought this was brilliant. In fact, I was so happy to see that Eric wrote for this. Because when I chose this artwork as prompts, I immediately thought of Eric and how well his style of writing would go with this artwork. And I thought about messaging him, but I held off. And then when I saw that he wrote, I thought that was very cool. I really like this all the way through, the imagery, the metaphors, the wordplay. He really draws the color from the artwork in, especially when he says, golden release, let go, drink in golden variants, and ambidextrous amber ambles along. Great use of alliteration. Even garlic glove mauve persists. And because you do see a light touch of mauve in the painting, but there's also there's the layers of the different creams and golden colors, which I think works really well with the mention of the garlic. And the Rah Rah Rasputin, lover of the Russian Queen, memories of Stalingrad and Leningrad, I'm not 100% sure about that, but I will say the thought that came to my mind, because if you look at the painting, it's painted almost as if it's in square blocks, and like not precise square blocks, but I kind of get the impression of walls put up. And Russia throughout history has been, or the Soviet Union, I should say, throughout history has kind of been at times very closed off to the rest of the world.
That's a clever thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yeah. And but I really like it. I like that he puts his dragonflies in, because I know Eric does really enjoy dragonflies, and doting dragonflies dart over purple African violets. Like, I can really imagine that as he was writing this poem, that he saw that image, that he saw the dragonflies darting over purple African violets. And ventriloquist pastiche, because a pastiche meaning, you know, kind of an imitation of something else. And, you know, the I thought that worked really well with ventriloquist and the thought that some people have no original thoughts to share, but rather just parrot other people in order to make themselves seem intelligent. But wonderful writing, very well done.
Absolutely.
Silent Teresa as well. I really love this piece. Very detailed with fantastic descriptions, wonderful imagery and interesting metaphors. A very unique wording, great read and wonderful write, Eric. That was a nice comment.
Very cool. It's always good to see Silent Tree making comments on enlightened poets. So definitely a nice comment. I'm glad you read that one.
Yeah.
All right. So this next poem I'm going to put up, I'm actually going to ask Eugene to read it and then go straight into commenting after you're done reading, because I need to get a couple minutes myself. So,
what is the concept?
It's a fairly long poem, and just make a fair to middling comment, you know.
Okay, this is called Extremely Hot by Poeta de Cover. Have you noticed the temperature nearly blowing up the thermometer? It's certainly the hottest that I've ever felt. Actually, think the sun could possibly melt. Could it be El Nino or global warming? Probably time now to heed the warning. Scientists trying to tell us what is what. Fact is, in America, it's extremely hot. Many a book written, thousands of pages, we know Earth has been through a few ages. When we think about it, there's been a plethora. Ice Age, Stone Bronze Age, Iron Age, etc. Blame the humans, they say. World is a buzz. Perhaps it's just the world doing what it does. I am all for looking after old Mother Nature, and it's not too late yet to make it legislature. Humans won't be here forever, is what I think. Just like the dinosaurs will soon be extinct. Some believe in God, all the written scripture, but I think science now paints the real picture. Global warming is happening, so we are told. But here in Australia, it's winter and very cold. If it's fault of humans, then it is a crying shame. Or could it just be they need someone to blame? In Northern Hemisphere, folks are hot and suicidal. I believe it's just the world passing through a cycle. Last year, we had terrible floods, but without a doubt, in the next 12 months, we will suffer from a drought. Sorry, I got sidetracked, but no, I haven't forgot. In Europe and America, at minute, it's extremely hot. Weather has many extremities, and it's obviously true. And for all you poor people sweltering, I feel for you. All the weird weather affects us people, that's for sure. But don't you forget Mother Earth has seen it all before. Many centuries from now, when man is dead and gone, planet Earth and Mother Nature will still be soldiering on. You probably think what I'm saying is just a load of bull. But whatever, keep out of the sun and try to stay cool. Trying to sleep through the heat isn't much fun. Persevere, keep the fluids up, and keep out of the sun. And home. Poet, I think you really did hit this prompt well. Because that does look like a hot day. And not just hot, but it looks hot and, there's greens in it and blues in it, but it still gives me that desert kind of feeling somehow. So I can kind of see where you went, the direction you went. And I think you did a great job, as always, with your rhyme, your meter. Your thoughts, how true. You know, more power to you. Your thoughts were right on the mark right on the money. You know, but blame the humans, they say, world is a buzz. Perhaps it's just a world doing what it does. I am all for looking after old Mother Nature, and it's not too late yet to make it legislation. That's a great stanza right there, because, you know, if there's something we can do, let's do it. Let's do it, and let's make it stick. You know, humans won't be here forever is what I think, just like the dinosaurs will soon be extinct. Some believe in God as a written scripture, but I think science now paints the real picture. And that's very possible. I mean, we don't know because things are changing, you know, and they've been changing over the last, I don't know, quite a few years. You know, I feel like the seasons are all shifting, and I think that, you know, a lot of truth in what you said here. And, you know, we're not really going to know. We can do what we can to try and reverse what we've done. I like that. Do what we can. Yeah. However I said that. And I think that that'll make a bit of a difference, you know, but I don't know if it's going to turn it all around because we don't know if that's possible. We don't even know if we're the cause. We can think we are, and we probably have something to do with it, but as I say, it could just be the way it's supposed to be and the way it's supposed to time out. So I think you did a great job with this, Coletta. I like the thoughts in it. And I like the way you presented it. I always like your rhyme. It's always good. Always on the money. Let me see now. Let me peek in the room over here. And Pam stepped away. I think, Pam, are you back?
I am back. I am. Great comment there. And yeah, I think, Poeta did really great on his take on this prompt, because you're right, while there are in the painting there are greens and blues, which are cooler colors, it you know, very much looks like the sun coming over the landscape with an orange sky, and you just really get the impression of a desert. And I like how he really makes us think along with him, you know, and the idea of that we notice, you know, the changes in temperatures, but the, you know, the why of it, you know, I like that he asks the why of it. You know, is it a higher power? Is it, you know, science? You know, is there something more going on? I really like where he says, many a book written thousands of pages, we know Earth has been through a few ages. When we think about it, there's been a plethora: Ice Age, Stone, Bronze Age, Iron Age, et cetera, et cetera. And the idea that throughout history, the Earth has gone through many different processes. So, you know, maybe this is all just a natural order of things, another age that Earth is meant to go through. I also like when he says, many centuries from now, when man is dead and gone, planet Earth and Mother Nature will be still soldiering on. So just amazing lines all the way through. Great take on the prompt and very well done. Let's see what we have next. All right. All right, up next we have An Evening with Friends by Bookworm Dave 227, and it goes like this. Orange-painted skies, sun setting to the west. This morning, the dark blues gave way to the lighter sky. Now we prepare the fire to send them off until next year. Some may even stay another week. Now all that stands is the accomplishments. Some did not get everything, but they did their best. Now I stand watching the colors come down, folded with care, as dinner smells come to us all hungry, hunger. What a week, we are told, many compliments, some complaints. All had something to say. As I gaze at the mountains overlooking the lake, knowing the sunset is symbolic,
I am reaching my sunset in scouting. This will be my last summer. Maybe look back, the sunset was whispering, making me aware the end of this chapter, leaving, knowing what the future was whispering to the oaks and maples, goodbye, and poem. And what a wonderful write on the experience of scouting and coming to that end. And, of course, I will comment more than that. First, I want to hear your thoughts, Jean.
Yes. Well, you know, I think that this was a great write. When it first started out, you know, I wasn't real sure what he was referring to. You know, orange painted skies, sun setting to the west. This morning, the dark blues gave way to the lighter sky. Now we prepare the fire to send them off until next year. Some may even stay another week. That's where, I wasn't too sure what was going on. But, you know, when it got down into where he explains, you know, I'm reaching my sunset in scouting, then it kind of gives you this sad feeling that it's a loss, because my son was in scouts for a while, believe it or not. Trust me, he's not the ultimate Boy Scout. But in scouting, you know, it's camaraderie. You know, you become friends. You rely on one another. You count on each other to pick up the slack, you know, and to make things, I don't know. You just pull together. It's a team thing, you know, when it comes down to it. And, you know, it's got to be kind of a really sad thing when you realize that this is coming to an end and this will be my last summer. Maybe look back, the sunset was whispering, making me aware of the end of this chapter. You know, and, you know, leaving, knowing what the future was, whispering to the oaks and maples, goodbye. That's sad to me. You know, because it's an end of an era, an end of a chapter in a life of something that, you know, apparently he loved and enjoyed. You know, I mean, you know, it's touching, and I like it, and I think that it was just well said and nicely done, and, you know, worth saying. So that's what I say. Anyway, just my thoughts. It's 2:00 in the morning.
I like those thoughts.
You know, I'm always out there somewhere.
I like that. I like that. And, you know, I have to say, when I first read this, I wasn't sure where it was going to go either. I knew from the title that it was going to be a friendship poem,
right.
You know, but I wasn't sure if it was, you know, like adult, you know, camp friends or what, but then you realize as it talks about, you know, the end of that time, that end of scouting, and you realize that, you know, here's a young man, like, moving on to the next stage of his life taking time to remember these good times in life and the friends that he's had in his youth. I really like the last three stanzas, especially as I gaze at the mountains overlooking the lake, knowing the sunset is symbolic. I am reaching my sunset in scouting. You know, so wonderful lines and great take on the chosen prompt. Very well done. All right. And our last poem for the night, and the rest will be carryovers to next week, will be Living in Figures by Diane Hine. And it goes like this. We are prolate ellipsoids, like ciliates, vertically aligned on the cells of a stem touching, but
sliding past each other in a water column, spruce blue, girdled by walls of amber and granite. Our tiny hands and feet are soft flippers. We paddle perpetually, trying to surface. She steps on my head and I sink a little, but at least I know she's rising. My upswept toes beat down like a wing onto his head, and he sinks a little, but at least he knows I'm rising. We are bobbing in limbo, but that's okay. Because there may not even be a surface to rise to. End poem. And Dean, your thoughts?
I think that it's a nice piece. I don't know what the prompt is, you know, what image number 12 looks like. But I think that it was well written. We are prolate ellipsoid. I don't know what that is. Like ciliates. I don't know what that is. So right there, I'm kind of lost, but I'm getting back on it because vertically aligned of the cell of the stem touching but sliding past each other in a water column. Blue spruce girdled by walls of amber and granite. You know, they're beautiful descriptions. You know, the water column and the blue spruce. And, you know, you can go down from there. Our tiny hands and feet are soft flippers. You know, we paddle perpetually, trying to surface. You know, she steps on my head and I sank a little. I was like, yeah, it sounds like, you know, some water play there, you know. And so it sounds like it was a nice that's the word I want, Pam. It sounds like a fun time. It sounds like they were enjoying themselves. You know, and upswept toes beat down like a wing onto his head, and he sinks a little. But at least he knows I'm rising. We are bobbing. That's okay, because there may not even be a surface to rise to. Now, that I'm not sure where that's coming from. But as I say, if I saw the image, I may, you know, I go, oh, yeah, I get it. But I think it was really well done. There's enough description to give you an image all your own. And I think that in itself was nicely done. So thank you very much. Diane Hines. Nice work.
I have to agree. I think it does paint without even seeing the painting, you can kind of get the idea of the images created with the writing. I will say that definitely with this contest, there's going to be a few words I'm going to have to look up the definition of before I will feel comfortable judging, but of course, you know, brilliant poetry all the way through this contest. I like the imagery and the word choices in this, and you know, our tiny hands and feet are soft flippers. We paddle perpetually, trying to surface. She steps on my head, and I sink a little. It makes you think of children at play in the water, but the end lines. In limbo, but that's okay because there may not be a surface to rise to. Kind of almost gives it a darker and a metaphorical feel, and the idea of maybe the idea that these children aren't going to have a future, and perhaps because of, you know, how nature is treated in current generations. But definitely great food for thought. Amazing
right.
imagery and metaphors, and very well done. Very cool. I'm glad Diane was inspired.
Yeah, and Silent Tree said this is a very descriptive piece. The short lines really work well and add to the imagery with a deft touch throughout her poem. Great read and fantastic write, Diane.
Awesome comment.
Silent
very
Tree
cool.
got it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we need her to save us when we're floundering.
help me out. Get me going in the right direction. Oh, sometimes I feel very
well. Exactly. But great show tonight. Thank you so much, Jean, for being here. Thank you to Simon and Jack for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Yep, and you can join us 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. And on Saturday, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, you can join Dexter and myself for Once Upon a Time with the topic of brothels and opium dens. And thank you again, Jean, and have a wonderful night, everyone.
Oh, right.
Sorry.
Normally I would have said I'm in when it comes to the title of the show, but I'm not in the brothels or the opium dens this time around. But it should be interesting. I can imagine we'll have some great writers.
Yes, I think it definitely will be interesting, for sure.
I hope Dex is feeling better. This is fun. Okay.
Well, I hope
thank
so,
you,
too.
Babe.
Yep.
It was fun. As always, it's always good to hang out with you. And,
you too, my friend.
Sometime later today. Thank you, everybody.
Sounds good.
Thanks. And that's the image.